And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on a football Friday with plenty to do over the next few hours as we get ready for another football weekend. Coming up, the Atlanta Braves have their opponent and their NLCS begins tomorrow. We'll get set for that. Plus, why is everyone getting so out of control when it comes to Shane Beamer? We'll preview the Gamecocks game with Vanderbilt and talk to the voice of Vanderbilt later on this afternoon. We'll get ready for Clemson and Syracuse. Talk with someone who covers Syracuse a little bit later on. What you would like to see from Clemson tonight? What are the toughest jobs in college football? And of course, as always, we'll get to our tasty top five coming up in a little bit, the best matchups of the week. We'll do our NFL preview running through all the games in week 6. I'll give you my game picks later on and a whole lot more throughout the afternoon. You can always join the conversation as well, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there. You can also leave a comment for the show, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Friday as we get ready for the football weekend. Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, it's Friday, so how can it be not less than pretty good?
Yeah, you got that right. It is pretty good. We got the Braves and the NLCS tomorrow. Clemson tonight with the ALCS. The Gamecocks tomorrow. Another interesting weekend of football and plenty to do. Let me start with the baseball first. We'll spend plenty of time on football this afternoon. The Atlanta Braves have found their opponent, and it's the LA Dodgers. So be careful what you wish for. I'm sure a lot of Braves fans wanted this matchup. You want the opportunity to seek revenge and get back at the Dodgers after what happened last postseason. You would love to be the ones to knock off the LA Dodgers after they've become the evil empire. And on top of it all, you also get home field advantage now. So LA has to fly pretty much coast to coast and get ready for a game tomorrow while the Braves get to stay home. And they get to keep home field advantage throughout the series. Probably the biggest advantage of the bunch. But doing so and having to go up against, at least on paper, the most talented roster in baseball. Last night, Dodgers-Giants, it was exactly what you wanted, at least up until the final pitch. Game 5, elimination game. Crowd was into it. It was dramatic. It was low scoring, well pitched. Came down to the 9th inning. Dodgers get a big hit. And then it's sad. It's unfortunate the game had to end on that blown check swing call. Now, I'm sure that will be the takeaway today. It was a bad call. It should be reviewable. I still don't understand if these sports want to sell us on the idea of how important it is to get these calls right, hence replay in the first place. Why not make everything reviewable, at least at the end of the game like that? I don't get that. Now, you want to tell me it's a little, you know, you can't review balls and strikes because they're a judgment call, but not really. We know what the strike zone is. We know what a check swing is. You saw the replay, and oh, yeah, that wasn't a swing. You should be able to review it. And if you're that umpire, you have to be 110. Not just 100%. You have to be 110% certain that he went around if you're going to call that for the final out of a series between the two best teams in baseball. It was a great night for baseball. It was a great series for baseball, but somewhat ruined by how it ended. And that'll be the focus of many. Now, look, who knows what he could have struck out in the next pitch. They were still trailing. They still had to score. The Giants struggled to score runs last night. It wasn't like they blew a call at home plate that would have led to the tying run. but it still was a bad look after what was supposed to be such an exciting night. Giants, Dodgers, elimination game, two great teams in baseball, well-pitched game, and then it came down to that, and that was just a lousy ending. It's like you have a birthday party, right? But then at the end, somebody gets injured, they got to go to the hospital. It's like, well, that really put a damper on the festivities. Or you get fired at the end of the holiday party at your for your company. Like, well, it was a great night, but what a poor ending. Ruined the great night. That was kind of the case here with the Dodgers and the Giants. The other takeaways being Cody Bellinger came up with a big hit for the Dodgers. Now, I've shared this multiple times on the show, but just like Dante's Inferno with his different rings or different levels of hell, you also have different levels of clutchness. And that very top would be the greatest to ever do it, and they get even better in the biggest moments, like Mariano Rivera and Michael Jordan. And then the next tier are great players who became all-time greats because of postseason performance. Curt Schilling, Fernando Valenzuela, many others. And then you have great players that just continue to be great. Derek Jeter, Kobe Bryant. And then you have the players that are just kind of average in the regular season and then become really clutch. They're really good in the postseason, right? Kind of like Eli Manning. And in baseball, we get these guys all the time. Luis Soho was a classic example. We talked about Francisco Cabrera yesterday. He's another one. Didn't have a ton of at-bats in the postseason. He, of course, had the game winner in Game 7 against the Pirates in the NLCS. And then the next year, he came in the NLCS in 93 against the Phillies, and he came off the bench to have a base hit in Game 4 and then an RBI base hit in Game 5. He only had 7 at-bats in the playoffs, but he hit over 400. Right? Wasn't much of a big role player in the regular season, but had some big hits there in the early 90s for the Braves in the postseason. He got better in those big spots. And that's Cody Bellinger. Bellinger hit 165 in the regular season. And then he gets the big hit last night. And he's had big hits in postseason games. Last year, on their way to the World Series, he had 4 homers and 13 RBIs in 18 playoff games. And the Dodgers have been in 6 winner-take-all games since 2017 in the postseason. Bellinger has either driven in or has scored the winning run in 4 of the 6 games. Incredibly clutch. Additionally, for the Dodgers, last night that was just the 3rd go-ahead hit in the 9th inning or later of a winner-take-all game in the playoffs. Bellinger did it last night. Chris Taylor did it in the wildcard game last week. And then Rick Monday did it in the NLCS back in 1981. So this Dodgers team with 2 victories this postseason, that's more than they have in the 9th inning or later of an elimination game all time in franchise history. Speaks to how good of a team they are, speaks to maybe a little bit of the destiny on their side as well. But Bellinger came up big last night for the big hit. Dodgers win. They get ready for the Braves. And I think this postseason proves something that many of us, myself included, have been complaining about. The playoff setup in Major League Baseball. Because you get this one game wild card. What is the point to that other than adding some excitement? It's also supposed to provide you with more of a reason to win your division. Major League Baseball would love to have division races coming down to the very end of the season. They want all these teams to believe that they're still in it. And when you look at this year, what happened? The Tampa Bay Rays won the division. The Red Sox won the wild card. Then they played each other in the playoff. Who won? The Red Sox. In the National League, the Giants won the division, the Dodgers won the wild card, and then they played one another in the playoffs, and who won? The Dodgers. So what advantage was there to winning the division? You're trying to sell teams on this idea that, well, we have to do the single game elimination because we want it to be so important that you win the division. Well, it wasn't very important this year. In fact, it didn't help whatsoever. The Giants won the division, they ended up losing to their second place team. The Rays won the division, they ended up losing to their second place team. Right, what was the Giants' reward? Hey, you won the division. Now you get to face the Dodgers. Now you get to face the second-best team in baseball. Instead of if you were the Brewers or the Braves or whoever, right? That was your reward for winning the division. Congrats. Now you get to worry about the Dodgers. Oh, but don't worry. You get home field advantage. Okay, the Giants went 1-2 at home. They played better on the road. They lost last night at home. That was the one difference. Well, because you won the division, at least you get home field over the Dodgers. Okay, great. We lost more games than we won at home in the series. We lost Game 5 at home. Didn't really make a difference. And now the Braves sitting at home waiting for the Dodgers, which, by the way, is another screwy part of the whole playoff system. The Braves had 20 fewer wins than the Dodgers this year, but because they won a crappy division, they get home field advantage against the Dodgers. Makes no sense, but hey, if you're a Braves fan, you'll welcome it. And you'll welcome the Dodgers tomorrow night. We'll see how things go. The Braves have home field advantage. They'll be more rested. They have a chance to make up for what happened a year ago. Could be an interesting series. And you have the Astros alive on one side, the Dodgers alive on the other. We may just get a repeat of that World Series a couple years ago where the Dodgers will have a chance to make up for what they believe was stolen from them. But it all begins tonight with the ALCS, the NLCS tomorrow. Let me shift to this. We will talk about the South Carolina-Vanderbilt game coming up later on this afternoon. Of course, I'll give you my official picks later this afternoon. The Gamecocks are favored by 18 against Vanderbilt. There was a guy who called into Shane Beamer's coach's show. You may have heard Beamer earlier on our station here on the Scott Hamilton Show. He had the coach's show last night. They take calls. We did this with the whole Ed Ogeron thing. I don't know why they continue to take calls on these shows. You ever listen to one of these shows and think, like, wow, that was a really interesting call? Probably not. But Shane Beamer, they took a call, and I guess it was the ski mask caller who got hung up on before he could get to the punchline. If you don't remember, if you don't know what I'm talking about, he's the one that called Will Muschamp last year and asked him if he wears a ski mask because he's, you know, been robbing the school with the money he's getting paid and the lack of production. Already calling in midway through the first season with Shane Beamer. And he's not alone. We've had people here on this station. We've seen people online reach out or post their own comments about how disappointed they are with Shane Beamer. I don't understand this. Not only because it's only been half a season, you can't judge somebody just yet, but also because what were your expectations? Las Vegas is always a good, like, North Star in that look to Vegas for what you should properly expect. Because Las Vegas removes any sort of emotion. They're trying to make money. They make smart decisions. They make business decisions. You may make emotional decisions. They're making business decisions. And if the Gamecocks win tomorrow, as they should, favored by 18 against Vanderbilt, they'll have four wins this year, already hitting the over of their win total. The expectations going into the season should have been about four wins. Now, we could have a different conversation about whether those should be expectations for the Gamecocks in 2021, but that's just where they are as a program. That's a whole other conversation, and that's from before Shane Beamer. But what was to be expected? If they win tomorrow as they should, they'll already hit their win total before Halloween, right? Midway through October, midway through the season. They'll already have more wins, or you want to say as many wins, as Vegas even thought. And maybe they don't win another game the rest of the year. But going into the season, you probably shouldn't have expected too many more wins than four. Vegas didn't. You may be an emotional fan wanting your team to win every week. Vegas is in the money-making business. They looked at this team and said, yeah, they'll win about four games this year. And here they are about to win their fourth game tomorrow. No, the offense is still struggling, but the defense is much better. They have won more games than they did last year. They'll exceed their win total and maybe even exceed the Vegas expectations to begin with. And it's a first-year head coach just getting his feet wet. He's learning as the team goes. He's trying to find his identity, much like the team is still trying to find theirs. Defense has improved after Will Muschamp's defense was so lousy despite being a defensive head coach. Offense is still a work in progress, but I think they have the wrong coach there. They have to get that figured out. There's still a lot of moving pieces in all this. The guy's been here for half a season, and already Gamecock fans want him gone. Right? Alter your expectations. Because when you look at Vegas, and there's a reason why they can build all those casinos, they know what they're doing. They set the win total at 3.5, and South Carolina will exceed it tomorrow. They'll beat Vanderbilt. By how much? We'll find out. But they'll win that game tomorrow. And when they do, they'll have more wins than their preseason expectations. Coming up, the most interesting games of this football weekend. I'll give you my top five as we do every Friday. It's the Morrow Midday Show. Right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, the most interesting games of this football weekend, plus a few teams in college football that should be on upset alert this weekend. I'll let you know here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We'll do our scouting, our opponent scouting report coming up in about 12 minutes. We'll check in with someone who covers Syracuse as we get ready for the game tonight, a Friday night game at the Carrier Dome for Clemson. 2 weeks to prepare. They head up there, or already have, to take on Syracuse tonight. And we'll get ready for that matchup in a little bit, plus my picks of the weekend coming up later on this afternoon as well. If you ever miss anything in the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. But every Friday, we come on here and we get ready for the football weekend, and I look at the slate of games, which are always so interesting when it comes to the college and NFL, and I pick out the five most interesting games and order them for you so you know what to watch for and when to watch them this weekend. And now we have the five best games of the weekend with our tasty top five.
This is a tasty burger.
It's the tasty top five.
I'm tasty.
Number five.
I'm like your TV guy. Number five, Oklahoma State at Texas. Top 25 matchup. Oklahoma State's number 12, Texas number 25. And when you talk Big 12 and you talk to these two teams, and especially these two coaches, we could see some real fireworks in this game. But it's also a big game for the Big 12. Oklahoma State trying to stay undefeated, try to creep into that top 10, make that game against Oklahoma be for the essentially at least the regular season title in the Big 12. And meanwhile, for Texas, you know, they're still trying to stay alive in that Big 12 as well. But also, coming off that game against Oklahoma this past week, I want to see how they respond. At home, now it's Oklahoma State coming in, number 12 team. Can you rally? Can you cowboy up? Can you get ready to go after that brutal loss you suffered a week ago? This is a good test for first-year head coach Steve Sarkisian. Right? You blew that game last week. Okay, can you get your guys back and ready to go the following week? Don't let Oklahoma beat you twice. And I'm not talking about the state, right? Because this is Oklahoma State. I'm talking about the team and that game last week. But number 12, Oklahoma State against number 25, Texas. The point total is probably pretty high. Let me grab it here. 60. So there should be a lot of points. Two ranked teams should be a good game. That's number five. Number four, Kentucky and Georgia. Georgia, the number one team in the country. They take on number 11, Kentucky. Now, I think this will be a blowout. The line is close to 20 points. 21.5, Georgia's favored by. I don't know if they cover, but I do think they win pretty easily. In fact, the point total for Kentucky alone is 9.5. So Vegas isn't so sure Kentucky even scores double digits against this defense. Kentucky likes to run the football. That's their MO. I don't know if they'll be able to do that against this defensive front on the road. So I think this will be a blowout, but of course it's a game of interest because it's the first time ever in the SEC East that we have two 6-0 teams going up against one another. And for Georgia, there's always that bullseye on the back of the number one team, not only from their opponents, but also the fans. You have to watch that team every week to see, are they going to slip up this week? You know, everybody's going to try to give them their best shot. And you watch and see, you know, is Alabama going to lose at any point? Or are they going to remain number one? Then they lost. Georgia took over. Okay, can they make it through the rest of the season number one, or are they going to slip up? So there's always interest when you have a number one team playing to begin with, but especially when they're playing a ranked team. And on the Kentucky side, this is the opportunity. We talk about this every week with different teams. Last week, it was the Bengals going up against the Packers in the NFL. Show that you belong. And that doesn't mean win the game, but just hang in there. If you do get beat, as Vegas expects, by over 21 points, by over three touchdowns, not a good look. Nobody's expecting you to be on the same level as Georgia. I don't think many are expecting Kentucky to go to Georgia and win this game, but can you at least compete? Can you show that you're closing that gap, or are you going to get beat by 30 points? Despite being the number 11 team in the country. So it's a big test for Kentucky. It's a tough game going on the road to the number one team in that defense. I think this is a bad matchup for Kentucky, but can you at least hang in there? I'm curious what we get in this matchup. Number three of the most interesting games this weekend, we move to the NFL on Sunday, and it's the Chargers at the Ravens. Both teams are 4-1. Both teams have young quarterbacks who are playing as some of the best quarterbacks in the league right now. This is a really interesting game. When you talk about some of the better teams in the AFC, these are two of them. Now, the Ravens won on that comeback on a short week Monday. They do get to stay home. It's on a short week. But the Chargers have to travel across the country, and this is a 1 o'clock kickoff. I'm always concerned about West Coast teams playing at 1 o'clock on the East Coast because for them, that's a 10 a.m. game. Plus the long flight, that's tough for the Chargers. But Justin Herbert is always so much fun to watch. The Chargers typically now are finding ways to win instead of lose. Lamar Jackson had that big comeback on Monday, and the Ravens have won 4 in a row. This is a big-time game, especially when it comes to seeding. Maybe these two will have to compete for a wild-card spot, depending on what happens with the Chiefs or the Browns in their division. Anytime you have two top teams like this go up against one another, of course, it's a big-time game. It's number three this weekend. Number two, back to college football tomorrow, Ole Miss and Tennessee. It may not get as much attention as some of these other ones, but it is a Big-time game. Ole Miss, number 13 in the country, goes to Tennessee. Ole Miss favored. Now, why is this number two on my list? Couple different factors. Number one, Lane Kiffin returns to Tennessee. So it is a night game for Tennessee. You know that place is going to be wild. And you can read all the stories that were published this past week or even in years past about what it was like when Lane left Tennessee and how they had to sneak him out a back door and how the students were rioting and burning mattresses, and now he comes back as the head coach of Ole Miss. This is a big-time game tomorrow night. Not only that, but you have Ole Miss as the number 13 team in the country, and you have Tennessee coming off two big-time wins in the conference. That offense is rolling, and that offense plays well against some of the lackluster defenses. Ole Miss defense isn't great. The point total is 82 in this game. Vegas thinks we may see the two, kind of like Ole Miss Arkansas last week, both score in the 40s or 50s. It should be a wild game tomorrow night, primetime under the lights, packed house, Lane Kiffin back in Tennessee, and two of the best offenses. Looking forward to it. Two of the fast-paced offenses, too. These two offenses move quickly. That will make for an interesting dynamic. It's the second most interesting game of this football weekend. Looking forward to Ole Miss-Tennessee tomorrow night. But number one, we shift back to the NFL. And it's the Cardinals and it's the Browns Sunday afternoon in the late window. These two teams are a combined 9-1. And not only that, but you get this quarterback matchup of Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, both out of Oklahoma. Now, they faced off one other time. It was 2019, Kyler Murray's rookie season, and he got the best of Baker. The Cardinals won by two touchdowns at home against the Browns, despite Murray being a rookie, and he outplayed Baker Mayfield. He posted a quarterback rating of 99. Baker posted a quarterback rating of 90 that day. And that was Kyler's rookie year, Baker's second. Now, fast forward a couple of seasons, they're both playing much better 2 years later, or at least their teams are playing better. The Browns are 4-1, but I still have questions about Baker. And the Cardinals are the last undefeated team, and Kyler Murray is a lot of people's MVP candidate right now. They just went out and got Zach Ertz this morning. He won't be able to play on Sunday, but they get him another weapon. This is an interesting game for the Cardinals. The Browns are favored at home against the undefeated Cardinals for a couple of different reasons. Number one, again, long trip for the Cardinals going from Arizona to Cleveland. They're playing on the road, and they're playing outdoors. I don't think it'll be that cold in Cleveland on Sunday. It is still only mid-October. But this is a good test for Arizona. Because the Cardinals, as I've been saying all year, what concerns me about them is that they may have to win only a certain type of way. And that's playing on turf, indoors, play quickly, throw it a lot, not worry about getting physical or play defense. The Browns are a very physical team. They like to run the football, take it out of the hands of Baker. They want to pound you. So this is a good test for the Cardinals. On the road, outdoors, probably won't be that cold, but you're outdoors playing on a beat-up, you know, grass track here, going up against a physical team. I don't know if Kyler is going to be able to throw it for over 300 yards and wing it all over the park. Let's see how the Cardinals fare against the Browns on Sunday. There's a reason why Cleveland, I know they're home, but there's a reason why they're favored. I think it's up to 3.5 now, more than just the standard 3 points. The Cardinals have some injuries. They have to travel a good way here, and also maybe a bad matchup for the Cardinals. Big test for them. They're the last undefeated team, but we'll know a lot more about them come Sunday. Plus, Kyler Murray versus Baker Mayfield. Baker loves to have a chip on his shoulder. Okay, don't get outplayed again by the guy that, you know, replaced you in college, the guy that came after you. You never want to be beat by that person. If you were the star in high school, right, you don't want somebody to come right after you graduated and break all your records and become the new star. Baker against Kyler will be fun to watch on Sunday. Shifting away from the five best games this weekend, what about a couple of teams on upset alert in college football tomorrow? Last week, I said Michigan. Now, I said I think Michigan's going to win the game, but it's going to be real tough. It's going to be closer than people probably think. Don't sleep on Nebraska. They're playing better football. When I look at the games tomorrow, there are three teams that stand out to me. One of them is Cincinnati, the number three team in the country. And now you get UCF, which is always a good program. Gus Malzahn, you know, is doing a pretty good job in year one. That's a tough matchup. And for Cincinnati, you got that big bullseye on your back as the number three team in the country. You'll be under a microscope every week. They're at home, at least, and they are a better team than UCF, but that'll be a challenge for them. What about number 10, Michigan State going to Indiana? We'll spend more on this, spend more time on this later when we get to my picks, because I have a lean in this game. But Michigan State, number 10, goes to Indiana. What's next for Michigan State? A bye week and then Michigan. Don't look ahead. And don't allow this to be a trap game if you're Michigan State. On the road against an Indiana team that's really underperformed this year, but that's when those teams can jump up and bite you, especially if you're looking ahead to a potential match, a potential date with Michigan in 2 weeks between a pair of top 10 undefeated teams. And the third team that I would put on upset alert that needs to be careful tomorrow, I mean, you could say that about every team every week, but specifically these three teams tomorrow is one of the games I just mentioned in the Tasty Top 5. And that's number 12, Oklahoma State, going to number 25, Texas. They're on the road going up against Texas. And Texas, the big thing will be how they respond last week. You could go one of two ways. Texas could pack it in. They could come out, lay an egg tomorrow, and get beat twice by that game last week. Or you come back even hungry. Right? You come back hungrier because of what happened. Oklahoma stole your lunch money. Now you're going to take it out on somebody else tomorrow. But don't sleep on Texas. I know they lost to Oklahoma. They lost to Arkansas. They lost to the two best teams they've played. They've had some disappointing losses this year. But Sarkisian and that offense, they can score some points. They'll be at home. Oklahoma State, I think, is still a little fraudulent. I don't think they're the 12th best team in the country. So they need to be on upset alert tomorrow at Texas. Three teams in the top 12, Cincinnati, Michigan State, Oklahoma State. Those are the three teams I think will have the biggest tests of the top 12, top-ranked teams, really, tomorrow in college football. And they all need to win to keep their hopes alive. When we come back, it's time for our opponent scouting report. We'll check in with somebody who covers Syracuse to get ready for that game tonight with Clemson and Syracuse. And we'll do it next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Tramp.
What you call me?
Tramp.
Well,
you don't wear continental clothes or Stetson hats.
But I tell you one doggone thing. It makes me feel good to know one thing. I know I'm an
actor. Got an opinion, baby.
All right, mama.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. On a football Friday as we get ready for the games this weekend. Begins tonight with Clemson and Syracuse in New York at the Carrier Dome. We'll catch up with Chris Carlson, our Syracuse guy, in a little bit. He's got some news breaking, apparently, so we have to stay tuned for that as well. Certain guys that we count on for all the different teams in the conference, and Chris has been our guy every year here on the Morrow Midday Show. Going back to when we were on in the mornings, previewing this game every year between Clemson and Syracuse. So we'll try to catch up with him in a little bit to round out the hour once he gets things settled over there. We'll see what any sort of news is, if it has to do with tonight. Is it Jim Boeheim announcing his retirement after this season, a la Coach K? Who knows? You can speculate all you want, see if it's of anything of interest in these parts. But we'll try to catch up with Chris in a little bit. In the meantime, let me give you what to look for in tonight's game instead. Let's flip-flop our course of action here this afternoon. We'll try to catch up with Chris in a little bit instead. But for Clemson, you had extra time to prepare. Right? And we know what's the biggest story this year for the Tigers. Obviously, it's the struggling offense. So now you get an extra week to try to figure some things out, to put some wrinkles in. Let me take it to a more local, or even for me, a more personal level as the voice of the Citadel. The Bulldogs had a week off before the VMI game. They came out in that VMI game with a new wrinkle. For them, it was an unbalanced offensive line and shifting the tackle at the line of scrimmage. And that helped them run it right down the throats of VMI, have a really productive offensive game, and win. And when talking to the coaching staff, they said, yeah, that was something that, you know, we came up with during the bye week and we were kind of saving. We were, you know, preparing to use that for VMI specifically. And they came out and had their best offensive performance of the year. So a little bit different for Clemson. Don't think it's going to be some sort of unbalanced line. They're not running a triple option. And, you know, that's Citadel VMI. This is the ACC. Somewhat different, but you can draw those parallels that, hey, your offense has been struggling. You had an extra week now to get ready. What are you going to come out with tonight? Any sort of wrinkles, any sort of improvements, even just minor, something that gets you going. You know, for Clemson this year, the most concerning part about that offense, and you could go find an article today on ESPN.com, put together by David Hale, looking at Clemson's offensive struggles, and they look at all the different areas. You know, they ask different questions or look at different roles for why the offense is struggling, such as how much does Clemson just miss Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne? Is this simply a case of being unable to replace such productive offensive players? Next on their list of questions, why didn't Dabo look to the transfer portal for help? Something we've been talking about the last couple of weeks and something that's really become a story. Next on their questions is how much of this is on the offensive line. Of course, the offensive line has been the position group that has probably been given the most blame, maybe right alongside DJ. And then lastly, they asked, does Dabo need to shake up the coaching staff? Those are the questions they ask and then look at when talking about the struggles for this Clemson offense, which if you take away their game against an FCS school, they're averaging only 14 points per game, which is startling. But for Clemson, when you look at that offensive performance, and this is an analytic, this is a statistic, but in the first quarter, Clemson has the ninth most efficient offense in the country. Their offense efficiency rating is ninth best in the country in the first quarter. Then the rest of the game, it drops down into the 100s. Out of 130 teams, Clemson is higher than 100 the next three quarters. In fact, that rating gets worse as the game goes on. What's my point? Well, we talk about this all the time. Coaches script the first 15 plays. They usually script, have an idea, the first two possessions. We heard Shane Beamer at that Vanderbilt game say, hey, we knew when we got down there inside the five, we were running that play with Jordan Birch. First time we got down there. They did. It was a disaster. But that was their plan. They knew regardless of how the game was going, like when we get there, that this is what we're doing. We already have the play for that situation. And so for Clemson, Tony Elliott, this offense, maybe it's a quarterback thing as well. He's more comfortable with the plays they diagram prior to the game. Right? In the meeting rooms and go through and practice and everything, they come out there in the game, and the offense is much more effective and efficient in the first quarter with those scripted plays. But what does it tell you? That they can't make the adjustments as the game goes on. So now you had an extra week. Now you have this bye week where you need to make some sort of adjustment, even if it's small. You can't fix a whole team or a whole offense in one off week. But you can tweak a couple things that can help. You could tweak a couple things that could show up in that next game that gives you like a sign of changes. Like, oh, they're doing something different. Or that looks improved. Or that gives me hope that they can work on that, continue to get better there in the future throughout this season. You want to see some sort of progress. And that's what I'll be looking for tonight for Clemson. Coming off a bye week, struggling offense. It's been good in the first quarter, not the rest of the game. I'm curious how Tony Elliott takes advantage of this extra time to try to adjust because he hasn't done a good job adjusting during games. We can go back to the game where they had the two-hour delay, whatever it was, right, and still didn't change anything in the second half. Well, now you don't really have that excuse. Now you have an extra week. And we know great coaches always take advantage of that extra time. But they go to Syracuse on a Friday night, Carrier Domes, sometimes a tough place to play, should be a packed house, Friday night game, could be a wild atmosphere. And Syracuse, I have to give them credit. Because I picked Syracuse to be the worst team in the ACC this year. And they have hung in there. I mean, not only are they 3-3, better than I thought they'd be at this point, but their last three games have all been decided by 3 points. They play nothing but close games. When they lose, they barely, right, they show you they're still not far off even when they lose. All three losses this year have been by 10 points or fewer. They have not been blown out once this season. So I give them a lot of credit. Right now, are they going through murderer's row? You know, no, they're not an SEC team, but they also don't have the talent of an SEC team. I did not think this would be a very good team or program this year. But I have to give props to Syracuse. They have battled. They have played hard. I remember last week they almost beat, they probably should have, they were leading. They almost beat the best team right now in the ACC at home. So Syracuse at home, back-to-back weeks. You hope there's not some sort of letdown from that Wake Forest game, but I would imagine not when you have Clemson coming to town. This is a really intriguing game tonight. And I'll give you my official picks later this afternoon, but Clemson is favored by 2 touchdowns. They only average to score 2 touchdowns against FBS teams. Right? So I don't know. What are you expecting? Like a 21-7 game? Or are you expecting this offense to really come out off their bye week and have a big night? That's a big number for Clemson still on the road. But I'll give you my official picks later this afternoon. We mentioned earlier about Shane Beamer and the Gamecocks, right? People are already upset with him, calling for him to lose his job, replace him with John Gruden. Someone even called his show last night so it's trying to make the joke again, the Muschamp joke that you're stealing from the school. I mentioned this earlier, right? But I don't know what should be expected. If they win tomorrow, that'll be 4 wins. They had 2 wins last year. You'll have double the wins. And I know, a little bit different. You have these non-conference games, and those were all the gimme wins. They haven't beaten really a good team yet. But you won only 4 games in 2019. You won only 2 games last year. Tomorrow will be your 4th win, which is already higher than the Vegas point total. And additionally, last year the offense scored 23 points. This year, 22. Last year the defense allowed 36 points. This year, 22. So the offense is about the same. The defense is much better. Now, you don't want to be compared to a coach who gets fired like Will Muschamp, but the point being, for Muschamp, that was year whatever it was, 4 or 5. For Beamer, he's 2 months in. Give him a little time, and he's already improving some things. He's improving the record. He's improved the defense. The offense is about the same as it was last year. That's not good enough, but at least it's not getting worse. You have to give him some time to get his recruits in. South Carolina should win tomorrow, giving them 4 wins, exceeding the win total already. And they may not win another game, but they'd still hit that win total. Right? Beamer and the Gamecocks are doing just fine. Maybe it's the expectations. As I always say, right? The expectations should be adjusted for the fan base, thinking much more of these programs, especially year one of a head coach turning around a program. 2 wins last year, 4 the year before. I don't know what you could expect of this year. Vegas expected about 4 wins. They'll get their 4th win tomorrow. When we come back, we'll try to link up with Chris Carlson if he's available. We'll wrap up hour 1, continue to get ready for the games this weekend. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio as we get ready for Clemson and Syracuse tonight at the Carrier Dome. And time to check in with somebody from the other side of the matchup to get the opponent's scouting report. As joining us now is Chris Carlson, who covers Syracuse for Syracuse.com. Follow him on Twitter at @CCarlson on SU. He gives us our Syracuse breakdown every year, and he's with us now. Chris, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, doing great, guys. How are you?
Doing well. Appreciate the time. As we get ready for this game tonight, first let's start here. I mean, Syracuse has played nothing but wild games the last couple of weeks. For you, that must be fun to cover this team. But as we get ready for this one, right, Clemson favored by 2 scores on the road. But Syracuse, they've been hard to put away. They play these wild, close games with everybody.
Yeah, I think the interesting part from sort of our perspective is, you know, 3 consecutive games down to the wire. How many times can a team dig that deep? And, you know, the starters aren't getting much rest. You know, they're playing every snap they can get out there. They lost they played without 3 offensive linemen at the end of their game against Wake Forest. Clemson's coming off a week where it got some rest. So how does that sort of reveal itself in the second half, if it does? It's kind of one of the things that I'm, you know, most curious about heading into tonight. But they're a much better team. Last year they were just getting blown out and killed and pretty much non-competitive. And they've shown that they can at least, you know, they've got some fight this year.
Yeah, which is what I wanted to ask you about. Maybe I just, from so far away, misread them. I picked them to finish last in the ACC this year. As somebody who covers this program and is around this team on a day-to-day basis, are you surprised at all with this 3-3 start and how competitive they have been even in their losses?
A little. And I'm still not sure that they're not going to be one of the worst teams in the ACC. They're just not a train wreck of epic proportions. But they did. I mean, last year they were so injured on the offensive line that they began the season with a converted fullback trying to play offensive guard, and it just devolved. Like you can't play that way. You know, you can't. You'd be good. When you're trying to make somebody an offensive lineman before the start of the season. So they were just in a really bad circumstance last year. You know, they're not facing horrible circumstances this year. You know, there's still a talent gap between them and most teams in the ACC, you know, certainly between them and Clemson. But they're just not in dire, horrific straits.
Right. Right. Now, you mentioned that gap with them and Clemson. So when it comes to the game tonight, as we said, they've played a bunch of close games. They almost beat, you know, the best team in the ACC last week. Now, quick turnaround for them. Clemson gets the extra week to prepare. So what do you expect tonight? Do you think we get another one of these dramatic down-to-the-wire games for Syracuse tonight?
You know, the one thing that I don't like for Syracuse matchup-wise is Syracuse, you know, they've gone from their quarterback starting the season, Tommy DeVito, who was kind of your thrower, more typical pocket passer, to this guy, Garrett Schrader. He's a transfer from Mississippi State. He's a running quarterback. Really, really hard runner, really hard to bring down. But we've yet to see him sort of connect on a deep ball with anybody. So I worry about that from Syracuse's perspective, because I certainly think Clemson is going to come in here. It's going to decide to shut down the run for Syracuse, and it's going to be able to shut down the run for Syracuse. And that's all they've been able to do offensively. So I picked Clemson by a couple touchdowns because I just, you know, I don't know what Syracuse is going to be able to respond with offensively. But they're going to need to hit a couple deep balls. They're going to have to score a couple, I think, easy ones to win. And it's possible, but we just haven't seen this quarterback able to do it yet.
You kind of already answered my next question, but I'll ask you anyways. You mentioned about that running game, and that's been Syracuse's MO, led by Sean Tucker, one of the more productive backs here, really the last 2 years for Syracuse. But it seems like you don't like this matchup for him. What should we expect for Sean tonight going up against this defense?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Sean's really good. He's very good at making the first guy miss. He runs hard. He's always falling forward and turning the 2 yard run into a 4 yard run or the 1 yard run into a 3 yard run. He's a very, very good back. A running back just can't do it alone. He's not Barry Sanders. And Syracuse, I have no idea what shape its offensive line is going to be in. It played without both of its starting guards last week, and Chris Blake and Darius Tisdale. Tisdale's out for a while. Blake, they're hoping he might be able to play, but he was limping pretty bad, just trying to get up and down the sideline. So don't like that if I'm a Syracuse fan. They lost their kind of most versatile offensive lineman and their center, Aaron Service, in the middle of that game. You know, again, was limping pretty badly on the sideline as he was supporting his teammates. So I just, you know, Tucker's fine. And if their offensive line was in great shape, I might give him a chance to be able to run the ball a little. But you can't beat a defense like Clemson with backup offensive linemen. It's just Sean Tucker's not a wizard.
Yeah, right. I got 90 seconds. The last thing I'll ask you, Chris Carlson, who covers Syracuse for Syracuse.com, what should we expect? I know you wrote about the attendance for Syracuse. What should we expect Friday night at the Carrier Dome? What kind of atmosphere do you anticipate tonight?
Yeah, you know, I don't know how it'll look on TV, but being there will be loud. That they've got a new roof on the dome. It seems to have only made it louder. Obviously the fact that it's indoors, the noise sort of gets trapped in there. Their student section has been really good this year. So I don't think that we'll have a huge crowd. They're expecting about 40,000 people, but they had fewer than that, and they disrupted Liberty's offense. They disrupted Wake Forest's offense a little bit. So I certainly think that's a challenge for Clemson, and you might see some difficulty communicating on offense.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens tonight. He's Chris Carlson. He covers Syracuse for Syracuse.com, on Twitter at @CCarlson, on SU. And as you get ready for tonight's game, read his work to find out more about the Syracuse team you'll be watching tonight. Chris, appreciate you making the time. Enjoy that game tonight.
Yeah, enjoy your Friday night.
Yeah, you as well. Appreciate it. Chris Carlson, our go-to Syracuse guy, who, by the way, is also apparently a Hartford Whalers fan. And I wish we had more time. I could have talked about that. And the breaking news, in case you were interested, is about number 44 for Syracuse. The jersey number 44. The AD was giving an interview on radio this morning, and I guess that's a source of drama there because it was previously retired. Then they're talking about bringing it out of retirement and making it a number for the running backs. It's a whole thing, I guess, around the Syracuse football program. Should number 44 be used or not? That was retired for, I think, Jim Brown? Did he wear 44? Ernie Davis? I forget. Somebody. So that was what he was working on. Appreciate the time from Chris, joining us to preview Syracuse for tonight's game. Hour 2 coming up next. We'll preview week 6 of the NFL.